Hi, this is Derek Miller, President and CEO of the Salt Lake Chamber and Downtown Alliance. Welcome to the CEO Success Stories podcast, where we sit down with some of the top CEOs from across the state to hear from them about their leadership philosophy, best practices, and lessons learned. As always, if you have any thoughts or ideas about whom we should interview for the next podcast, send us an email at info@slchamber.com. Or, of course, you can message us on social media anytime to our handle at Salt Lake Chamber. We're pleased to be joined today with the CEO of Ivory Homes, Clark Ivory. Clark has been the CEO of Ivory Homes, Salt Lake City, since 2000. Previously, he was the director of the Salt Lake City branch of the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco and served as chairman of the branch for 3 years. Additionally, he served as president of the Romania-Moldova mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which led Clark to establish the Utah-Moldova Business Partnership. And currently, he is co-chairman of the Salt Lake Chamber's Utah Community Builder, something we're going to get into in a little bit. He's also co-chairman of the Real Estate Advisory Board to the David Eccles School of Business, as well as serving on the advisory board for the Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute. Clark, we're grateful that you'd spend this time with us today.
Hi, Derek. Happy to be here.
Everybody knows Ivory Homes. I think most people know that it's a family-owned business, but it's been said, and you can confirm this or not, that you didn't always want to go into the family business, yet here you are. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I've always loved working with my family, and particularly with my dad. We have a great relationship. But when I was going through college, you know, my dad, it was so tough in the real estate market that my dad really almost tried to persuade me to go into another field and move away from real estate and home building. He was really digging out right then, and he thought there'd be maybe brighter and bigger opportunities in other places. But you know, I had my experiences working with economic development of the state and, you know, at a variety of other places, and I was always sort of drawn back to helping my dad build this business for our family, this legacy business that really represents, you know, commitments not only my dad, but even my grandfather and my great-grandfather, as they've sort of been pioneers in this state and, you know, had that desire to always build something that we could be proud of.
I wish our listeners could be here with us in the actual Ivory Homes offices and see, as I've seen, the pictures on the wall as this business has grown up over the years, and the pictures of your dad and your grandfather and the business partners throughout the year. Your leadership philosophy, I'm sure, was informed by them as leaders. Tell our listeners about that philosophy. How do you approach leading this organization?
Well, you know, it's amazing. When I took over for my dad, I said, you know, as I step forward, this will be a lot easier if I can have everyone step forward with me and take the baton from Ellis, who really did such an amazing job at establishing our business, first as a developer and then later as a home builder. And we really do believe that we have a stewardship here in the state of Utah. You know, early on, Ellis trademarked our company as Utah's number one home builder. And he probably did that before we actually were number one in terms of leading, in terms of numbers.
It was aspirational, huh?
No question, but, you know, he really wanted us to strive to be the best we could be every year and to sort of maintain that commitment, not for a short period of time, but for a long time. In fact, he said the big goal that we should, you know, strive for was 50 years being the leader in our market. And, you know, that's a long time. I said to him, well, that'll put me at about 74 before we accomplish that. And that's okay. Because I don't know what else I'm going to do that would be any better. I love being a home builder. I love working with our team. And I love that what we're involved with as developers and builders in the state of Utah is creating neighborhoods and communities that will really change our landscape forever. And it does have such an impact on the families and the individuals that call those neighborhoods home, you know, that go there every night after work and just say, this is what makes it all worth it. And this is the place I want to raise my children, or this is the place I really want to enjoy my retirement. I mean, whatever their purpose is based upon their stage of life, you know, we need to contribute to that and make it that much better. And if we do our job, then I think we will. We'll help them in a big way.
You've hit upon a couple important themes that I wanted to talk with you about. And one was giving back. The other was helping to build community. And we build community, of course, by building individuals and families, giving them those opportunities. You're involved in a number of ways in doing that, not just as the CEO and leading Ivory Homes, but I also know you're passionate about other issues in the community, education, housing affordability. Right now, we're in the middle of a legislative session. They will be making important decisions, debating these growth issues. Tell us about your vision, what you see for our state's future.
Well, I think we have to invest in the long term. And what does that mean? I think we need to invest in our people, and we also need to provide the kind of lifestyle that has made Utah such an amazing place to live. And if we can invest in our people and we can continue to protect the lifestyle that we so value, then Utah will remain the place that we love. And when it comes to education, we've been working on some very exciting things lately, both with the University of Utah and with UVU. We really want to have an impact on as many individuals directly as we can. And so we've done a few things there. One, we do a lot of scholarships, mm-hmm. But we also recently, with Ruth Watkins, the president of the university, established a new income share agreement, which will allow more and more students to accelerate their path for graduation. We're actually going to focus initially on those that have senior level hours but are taking a long time to get to graduation, and go to them and say, look, you can improve your earning power and you can graduate a lot quicker if you participate in this program. We're going to make funding available for them to get through more quickly, and then they don't have to pay it back until they're well established in a job, and then they pay a percentage of their income back, which will go back into helping other students and propel forward. We think that while the graduation rates have been on the rise at the University of Utah and will approach 70% this year, we want to see it increase even more, because having people complete those degrees really puts them in a great position to take advantage of opportunities and also serve the businesses that are growing and prospering here and need that workforce. But that's part of how we're going to do it, is through education. And I'm glad that so many people are focusing on that at this point. I think that a lot of us can do things individually that can help in these areas as well. And we're going to do our part. We hope to impact 1,000 people directly through scholarship, through mentorship, internship, and other opportunities that will help them grow each year. And that's a big part of our focus.
Oh, that's terrific. So housing is something that's near and dear to your heart. You're a housing builder, a home builder, and you're involved in this issue, which we have a challenge right now. Tell our listeners about that challenge and what we need to do about it.
Well, I think one of the things that has made Utah so attractive for so many companies and employees that love to come here is that we have great housing options available at reasonable prices. But in the last several years, we've seen those prices on the rise. And now it's becoming increasingly complicated and difficult for them to afford a new home. And so we're left with sort of a quandary. What are we going to do to maintain this lifestyle while we have such incredible economic prosperity? It's only going to happen if we really approach it together as a community. And that's what we're trying to challenge everyone to do, is work towards smart growth. Because affordable housing is really key to our economic development and prosperity, and it can be done in a way that will really reduce, you know, air pollution, that will cut down on commute times, that can really help us, you know, maximize, you know, our current infrastructure, schools, hospitals, and everything that's already existing in some of these neighborhoods and communities where they're so well established. What we've got to do is just make sure that we have, you know, common sense when we go about zoning and when we go about planning and when we go about building and developing our communities here in Utah. And what that's going to take is everyone understanding the challenge and working together to make sure that that comes off. You know, if more and more people can own houses, then we know that their own net worth is going to be substantially greater. In the U.S. right now, we know that those who own homes, they have an average net worth of over $200,000. Mm-hmm. And those who are that are renters, they have a net worth of $5,000. And so the more home ownership opportunities we can give to people, the better. And we're doing a lot of things with the Housing Gap Coalition at the University of Utah with our, you know, Ivory Innovations, looking for all kinds of opportunities to bring innovative ideas from throughout the country. We just recognized the top 25 ideas that came from all over the United States. And in the next week, we'll be announcing, you know, the top 10 ideas. And ultimately, we're giving a large prize to the top three ideas that come forward in regulatory reform, in finance, and in construction and design. So we're looking at this every possible way, bringing in ideas from outside of the state, looking at the best ideas within the state, challenging our communities here to work together, looking to our legislature to make sure that they're giving us the greatest opportunities and paths forward to have excellent growth and, of you know, housing affordability as a top priority. And I think by working together, we're going to do better. You know, in 2006, we saw sort of the writing on the wall with the way that housing had been overbuilt. And we were one of those that pulled back early, paid off our debts, and did the right things. And we see it just as clearly today that we're not going to have a problem with oversupply. We're not going to have a housing crisis like we did before. It's just sort of the opposite of what we experience. There's an undersupply. There's a situation where affordability is so challenged, and it is equally a crisis, but we've all got to work together to solve it. And I'm excited that so many people are engaged, that so many other businesses have shown their support and are involved, and that legislative leadership and many of the cities are also really seeing that this is a priority. And in order for us to continue to see the kind of economic development that will give the right kind of jobs to our kids and our grandkids, we need to have the right kind of housing opportunities as well.
I've been really excited, just as you mentioned, Clark, to see how many different organizations have gotten behind this effort. And what it really tells us is that housing affordability is not just an issue of building houses, it's an issue that impacts us all. And that's why we see so many industries and so many businesses and individuals getting involved. Another thing that I'm really excited about, and I'm excited about it for a few reasons, not the least of which is that it's something that you and I get to work on very closely together, and that's the Utah Community Builders. This is a foundation that the Chamber created a few months ago based on a conversation that you and I had not long after I took the job as the president of the Salt Lake Chamber. And we talked about a rising interest of businesses in having social impact for good beyond just your traditional business issues. You know, in business and at the Chamber, we focus on taxation, regulation, education, transportation. Those are core. But there are so many other community issues that have a business connection and a business impact that these organizations are more interested in than ever before. Tell me about your vision for the Utah Community Builders and what you hope it will accomplish.
Well, first of all, I think business just knows how to get things done.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what really I think is exciting about thinking of business leaders joining together to have a social impact. And, you know, the young generation of business leaders that are coming up, for them, when you ask them about contributing more to the community, they really do want to contribute, and they want to do it in an authentic way, and they don't want to do it thinking that they're doing it so that, you know, they can get something else in return. Truthfully, they just want to make a difference, and they want to see that they've had a real impact on the social fabric of our community. And I think that's what's exciting. As I've talked to, you know, many of these young business leaders that are coming up, they're very excited about being involved in something that will just have an immediate impact, a real social impact on our community. And, you know, the fun thing that I think we're going to have is we're going to have a group, sort of a strike team task force that can really get after a critical need, something that arises in our community that becomes almost an emergency at times, we'll be able to respond to and really come out and unify the business community and make a difference. The other thing that we're able to do is, because this is a 501(c) that the Chamber's formed, we can engage the foundations and other organizations and institutions in our state that have sort of restrictions on what they can do in terms of their contributions and their involvements. And we can get them directly involved in and engaged in coming up with solutions that will make an impact. I think some of the things that we will impact will be, like you were talking about with me before, intergenerational poverty. Yeah. How do we help people overcome, you know, these enormous barriers that can really become just, you know, passed down from generation to generation? How can we elevate people in areas where education just is not easy to come by, where, you know, they don't have the support at home or the mentorship that they need, the role models that they need? What can we do to take great ideas that are happening, like at the Neighborhood House here in Salt Lake City, and expand those ideas to a broader community? I mean, how can we impact the general health and welfare of our community? What are those items that we need to focus on? You know, we're just getting started, and we're very open-minded to all the ideas of our advisory board, but we're going to be looking at data as well and finding out what will really have the greatest impact, what are the greatest needs. And I'm excited to be involved and contribute. Certainly, housing's a part of it, and we're already doing stuff there, but there's a lot of other things that we need to look at and make sure that we're really focused on those needs going forward. So I'm just very appreciative of the opportunity to work with you on this, Derek.
Well, and thank you for your leadership. One of the things that is constantly impressed upon my mind is the fact that although it is true that Utah has the fastest growing economy in the country right now and a very prosperous place by any measure, we would make a mistake if we patted ourselves on the back and said that it had mostly to do with things that we had done. We all collectively as a business community certainly have a role that we play, but primarily it was because of important decisions and investments that were made years or even decades ago. And so the question for us should always be at the forefront of our mind, what can we do now to ensure prosperity into the future for the next generation? We are the beneficiaries of important decisions that were made, and what can we do to leave that same legacy? And I think that's what, in my mind, what Utah Community Builders is all about.
I think you're exactly right there. And as an example, the business community did rally around the idea of getting mass transit,
yeah,
you know, expanding our roadways and freeways and doing all that way in advance of when it became a crisis, right? We jumped on it early. We found the funding sources. We got federal involvement. We got our, you know, delegation involved in leading the charge in Washington, D.C. But we were ready when we, you know, at the very best possible time to build a lot of that infrastructure during sort of part of our more challenging economic years. We got a lot done, and that was because of the foresight of the business leaders in this community, and the Chamber really pulled them together. And I think we are going to have an opportunity to look at things down the road, see them well in advance, and do something about it early on where it doesn't cost nearly as much and it can have a huge impact.
We're coming up on the final three questions of our podcast here. We always like to ask each CEO these same three questions. The first one, Clark, is what's your favorite leadership book? That could be either a management type book or a biography of someone that you believe is a great leader, but what would your favorite be?
Well, I my favorite is usually the one that I'm focused on right now.
And I know you're a reader because I've received many books as gifts from you.
I do give a lot of books to my friends and to my colleagues. And I think it's just good that we always challenge one another with new ideas. And the one that I really love and I'm going to be keying on as we think about Utah Community Builders, and in fact, I want to give you a copy, Derek. I've ordered them in and they arrive tomorrow. But, It's called The Prosperity Paradox by Clayton Christensen, and it is really a fascinating read. It focuses on what countries have done that have made a difference in terms of their prosperity. And the point is, if we always are sort of thinking about poverty or the problems in the world, it's really hard to solve anything. But when we start thinking about how we can create new markets and how we can help people prosper, then it's amazing how, you know, we can lift the tide, we can see all these boats and ships rise, and everyone is benefited. And Clayton, who's, you know, I think just such an amazing thinker, just causes you to think about what it is that really made a difference in the 19th century to bring the United States into this prosperity situation that we've been benefiting from for now a century. And then he talks really specifically about what happened in South Korea, where he's very familiar. But he talks about a lot of other countries and the experiences that they're going through and what's made the difference. And it really does make you think, and it's made me think, what is it that we need to do to really create new markets, you know, so that there's greater opportunity for all. He talks about all the businesses that really reached out and expanded, you know, consumers' availability of certain products where they were never possible before. Yeah. And the same thing I've been thinking about, is it possible for us to come up with housing solutions that will make housing more affordable than it's ever been so that more and more people can attain home ownership? Is it possible that we can hit, you know, rents that are so low in some situations that we could actually house a lot of those people that are currently unhoused and that are, you know, really a very expensive and, you know, and costly weight on our entire system? If they have decent housing, if people have decent housing, it solves a lot of their, you know, health and social ills, and it gives them a real base that they can build on. But I really love this book because it just makes you think about how it is that we can expand markets, what it is that we can do to bring greater prosperity, you know, to the state of Utah is what I'm thinking about. So I challenge everyone to sort of pick up that book and take a read. It just came out. And of course, you know, The Innovator's Dilemma and some of his other books have been so well regarded. I like this one a lot. I think you'll enjoy it, Derek.
I'm looking forward to reading it from the favorite professor in Harvard from Rose Park, everyone's favorite.
I know. And I lived in Rose Park and I went to Harvard. So I have those two connections with Clayton Christensen. It's sort of fun.
Clark, question number two. What is the best piece of advice you've received?
Well, you know, my dad, when he really talked about, you know, his philosophy of business, and really it wasn't so much advice, but it was watching him. He went through a very difficult time period, and truthfully, his attorneys and advisors really felt like when the company was so leveraged, and their debts were basically, the sum total of their debts were greater than their assets, that he really should have considered bankruptcy. And yet he felt such a responsibility, such a commitment to pay back all those banks and lenders that had been financing us for years that, you know, when I joined with him, that became sort of our common crusade. And it was better than any education I, you know, ever had at any university, to watch him, you know, do whatever it took to just honor his commitments and his obligations. And after going through that experience, it made me very aware of how fragile success can be. Mm. And it made me, I think that's why in 2006 we identified the downturn as early as we did. I always had my dad's, you know, the echo of my dad's words in my ears. That we needed to be aware that things can see a sharp reversal. And to watch him do that and to have the integrity that he had, I mean, it really helped establish our company. I think that was as important as anything we ever did. It wasn't a success. It was actually a failure, and digging out of the failure and watching him do it with such integrity, that was the greatest message. And as he's advised us, as we look at new deals, You know, he's always said, don't just assess it based upon price or the product, but really focus on the people that you're working with. And if you can align yourself with the right people, then you'll never really regret what you've done. You'll work it out. You'll have the greatest possibility for a positive outcome. So those are a couple of principles that I've learned from my mentor and my dad, and they echo in my ears constantly.
Here's the last question. One of the purposes of this podcast is to give up-and-coming leaders an opportunity to learn from those like yourself. What piece of advice would you give for those who are looking to be leaders in their own professions and industries?
You know, I talk to a lot of our young managers and even those, young people that I know that are currently either at university or going through their first years in business. And I always tell them this, you know, focus not only on the pay, but focus on the experience, the learning opportunities, and go to work with people who really care about your growth and development. I think if we can align ourselves with associates, people, bosses who really care about our development, and then we care about their success, it's amazing what can happen. And I think about the great people that have just set examples for me and how much more I've learned from that. If I had taken advantage of the highest possible paycheck coming out of school, I would have missed opportunities for experiences and to work with people that I think put me ahead in the long run. And so I think it's what I would say is take the long view. Look for the best possible experiences that are going to help your own personal growth and development and that are going to give you an opportunity to make a real impact. Pay in the end will take care of itself, and the money will all take care of itself. We need to look for opportunities to have an impact. We need to look for opportunities to grow.
Thank you, Clark, for joining us today on the CEO Success Stories podcast. It was a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Derek.
If you have ideas or thoughts about whom we should interview for the next podcast for our listeners, please send us an email at info@slchamber.com or message us on social media to our handle @SaltLakeChamber.